Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to Game Recognizes Game, brought to you by Apple's Health. Picture this. You're a young man, you're growing, and you got some challenges at home. But you got some skill, you got some athletic talent, and you've been blessed with this golden arm that can throw a football like it's shot out of a cannon. So what do? You dream. You dream big. And then you do whatever it takes to reach your dreams, to become an NFL quarterback. Because while you're dreaming big and you put all that hard work behind you, well, all that trouble at home, that goes right to the rearview mirror. And that's exactly what our guest did, Mr. Dan Orlovsky, who spent 12 years living his dream as an NFL quarterback. But when it was all said and done, there was no plan B. No. It just turned the page and start a new chapter. There was nobody more prepared ever on any field than Dan Orlovsky, and he took that same relentlessness to media. And today, he's considered one of the most important NFL analysts in the entire sport and a thought leader for the future of the sport. Man, it's my honor to introduce my friend, Dan Orlovsky. What up, man?
That was good. Welcome stuff right there, man.
You like that?
Yeah, that was well done. Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Absolutely, man. Listen, we talk a lot about on the show about the seeds of greatness. And we'll get to some of the troubles you had, but at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, what happened in the future. But let's talk about those seeds. When did you realize that, you know, I might have an opportunity here?
Yeah. I would tell you that, like, as a kid, I loved sports. Like, sports was the only thing I enjoyed doing. It was by far the thing I wanted to do more often than not with my time. And then when I was a little league baseball player, baseball was my first love. Marty, you've heard me talk. I was that 12-year-old baseball player. Well, I was like, I was the best baseball player on the planet. You know, like I would hit 5 home runs a game. It felt like
I have 2 of those at home.
Yeah. And then I turned 13, and I was like, what happened to my baseball life? So baseball was my first love. I started to play football right around the age of 10, but it wasn't my first love. It was a little bit harder for me. I was a really good, like, natural athlete, but really unathletic as a kid. You know, I was lanky and tall. I didn't have any muscle. I couldn't jump. I couldn't run. I had no foot quickness. But, like, the hand-eye and skill was my thing. And I could throw, to your point.
Yeah.
So football became, like, the secondary thing for me around 10, 11, 12. And then when baseball shifted and I went from the best player to, like, you stink. It was like, I got to find, you know.
For the folks at home, between 12 and 13, you realize very quickly you stink.
Yeah, it was like when I went from striking everybody out to batting practice. And so when baseball started to take a little bit of the back seat, football started to take a little bit of the front seat. I started to fall in love with football a little bit more. I started to fall in love with playing quarterback. I loved quarterback. I loved the center attention of it. I loved that the team needed me. Like, the team needed me. My friends needed me. Yeah. I loved the leadership challenge of it.
I like how you call them your friends.
Yeah. They were my friends.
Yeah, boys.
That's what the locker room and my teammates became for me. And so, you know, I knew when I was, like, probably eighth grade, I could throw. And then when I went to high school, I always heard the chatter around town. I grew up in Shelton, Connecticut. High school football is a big deal. Yeah, I heard the chatter around town. Yeah, that like they could win a state championship with this kid. And when I was a freshman, they had this really good senior quarterback. And so I would dress for the high school varsity games. And he got hurt right near the end of the season. They were a really good team. And in that moment, I was like, oh, I'm going to get the chance. And another kid played ahead of me.
Did you want the chance as a freshman?
Absolutely. I wanted it. I wanted it more because it was going to put me into the group of kids. You know, yeah. Like I wanted it more than anything I could express. And I didn't get
not everybody wants it, which is why I asked.
I wanted it. Yeah. And then I didn't get the chance. The team ended up being really good. And then my sophomore year, I got the starting job and we were really good. And I started to constantly hear the noise of if they don't win three state championships with this kid, it's going to be a disappointment. And over the next 3 years, we ended up winning one my senior year. But I knew right around the middle of my high school when school started to send the letters and recruiting process, okay, like this could be a thing. Yeah. And it was never not going to be a thing for me. Like I was going to figure it out and find the way. And then my sophomore year of college was the first time I knew, I really, really like deep down inside, I went from a dream to this is what you're going to go do.
Yeah. It's interesting because the bell rang and you sounded you took the calling.
Yeah. Right?
Why do you think you were prepared for that? Because there's a lot of freshman kids, and playing freshman teams, even JV,
yeah.
who were just not prepared to get the call.
Good question. So I remember my dad when I was a kid, and I don't remember the exact age, but my dad as a kid, and I'm going to give you the 10 to 14 age range, that's the guess. He would always say to me, you're going to play on Sundays. And as a kid, I had no idea what that meant. I was like, my games are on Saturdays. And he kept saying, like, you're going to play on Sundays. You're going to play on Sundays. And so I think he started to, like, speak that into me in a way. And then there was this standard set of how you were going to work from my father. There was a standard of set by my teammates. Like, the high school I went to, I would get driven to in eighth grade. I would wake up. I would ride my bike to the high school. I would join the high school football team working out. And then I would go to school as the eighth grader. And
different school.
Different school. Yeah, yeah. And that made me feel like a Superman. Like I was superhero because I was with the boys. I was with, and I was proving myself. And I think that like I'm obsessed with proving myself on a daily basis to myself. And I think that started that journey for me. And once I got into that feeling of like the self-empowerment of what it felt on a daily basis to do hard things in front of my peers, it became intoxicating. And so I think that was like my father speaking it, but then also like getting a taste of what that felt like for an athlete was kind of like the kindling of the fire.
You said something about getting through the hard.
Yeah.
And we try to instill that in our kids and youth sports. You have to place them in adversity and get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Sure.
You almost relished in that, though.
I loved it. I loved it. Part of it for me, Marty, was you don't think about it as a kid. I'm much more aware of it as an adult now, but I loved the chance to just keep going at it. I go back to my 12-year-old baseball year. We were a really, really good baseball team, little league baseball team. I was a kid that would hit two home runs every game and I would strike out 18 kids.
Connecticut was huge then in little league baseball.
We went to the regional championship. Ooh. I was pitching. I'm going into the sixth inning, top of the sixth inning. I have 15 strikeouts. Strike out the first batter, strike out the second batter. Yep.
Wow.
Walk the next kid. Perfect game, gone. I gave up one home run in my little league career. First pitch in the next kid, Mark Lewis, lefty, hit an opposite field home run. Only home run I gave up. And so we're down 2-1. I go in the dugout and I'm just unbelievably emotional, crying all over the place. One of my boys sat next to me. He was like, dude, what are you crying about? I was like, I just blew the game, And he's like, no, you didn't. I'm like, yes, I did. I just blew the game. He's like, no, you didn't. I'm like, yes, I did. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, you did. I was like, thanks, dude. And I don't know, that didn't break me, didn't break me. It made me like want to have something like that opportunity again. And I think that failure of experiencing that early on and having no one come save me was huge for me. Because it, you know, like I said, you, as a kid, you don't pay attention to it, but I am aware of it now. Failure is temporary, regret is permanent. You know, and I think as a kid, I learned failure that was temporary.
Beautiful, actually.
You know, like I realized as a kid, like, oh, okay, 13-year-old baseball was coming.
Turn the page.
Yeah, and it wasn't maybe something I was conscious of in the moment, but I think I subconsciously realized, like, oh, I just failed on the biggest stage of my life at that moment, and I'm okay. Like, I got another opportunity. And so I kind of became obsessed with, you know, trying to have the opportunity to throw another punch.
Man, that line was heavy, man.
Yeah.
You know, failure is temporary, regret is permanent. That is needs to be etched in marble.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I've had the, we've had some fun times coaching Little League.
Sure.
And we see the kids in the dugout crying. We've never, ever stopped them because we know the kid who's crying cares.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a good quality eventually as an adult. You know, as a kid, it makes you feel overwhelmed at times. Yeah. But you can't, I think it's a really difficult thing to teach the care, the passion.
Yeah.
And again, I wasn't as aware of it as a kid, but I once then that's why sports are so big for kids, in my opinion, even more so now than ever, is it gives them the chance to go through those hard times and fail, because they're going to. And as a parent, what I've realized, and you've gone through it a little bit, is like, it's really hard to not try to save them. It's really hard. Like, I had an experience with a son of mine the other, a month ago or two, where, you know, sports didn't go his way, and I had the text message written out to the coach, because the coach is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say, not in a, like a confrontational manner, but I just had a question, and I, Dan, you can't send this. You got to let him go through this himself, you know? And it's hard as a parent, especially a parent that, you know, you pride yourself on overcoming and accomplishing and figuring it out. And so, you know, you to have the, you got to have the restraint to allow your kid to go through it, because then you're stealing the journey from them if you don't, or if you step in, you're stealing the journey. And I was so lucky that I didn't have the journey stolen for me. And I think just as a kid, the more you go through those hard times and those failures and you realize, I'm not dead. I get the chance to go do it again. You get hardened from it. And that's when you realize, like, oh, failure's temporary. Like, failure's just a temporary thing in the moment. Regret, like, once you lose to that failure and you go, no, I don't want to go take that at bat again. You will regret that tomorrow.
That's
or you know what? I'm not going to go. I don't want to go try, you know, run out there again. You will regret that at some point. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be, but you will regret it. But failure, that's a temporary thing, man. Yeah. But regret is permanent.
Striking out looking, man. But you never want to strike out looking.
No. Swing the bat.
It is amazing how a little bit of ice cream at the end of a Little League game kind of washes away.
Yeah. Bring the truck.
Bring the truck over. Man. Let's talk a little bit about you know, sounding that bell when you take that call, because as a sophomore you started in your high school, had a chance to go to the States 3 years in a row, right? And you got your state championship as a senior. The letters started coming.
Mm-hmm. It's
big schools, man. Purdue, mm-hmm. Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
You said no. You wanted to stay home. And I always thought, man, why did he stay home?
I stayed home because everybody told me I was crazy to stay home. I stayed home because the coach who recruited me, Coach Edso, was the one guy that didn't, I feel, sell me on the lie of my dream. You know, when I was taking those visits, it's weird because I loved being the center of attention as the quarterback. I didn't love the recruiting process. There was something about it that just felt kind of fake to me. And so when all these schools are telling you, and I was aware, like I have an ego, and I was aware that I was a good player. But when you had like Penn State and Florida being like, yeah, you'll come and start for us right away, I'd be like, you know, UConn's telling me I have to compete for the job. They're just coming from Division I AA into 1A.
Yeah.
And so the process, but the two main reasons were, you know, I knew Coach Edso was recruiting me, and he was selling this ridiculous dream. This is way too big of a dream to accomplish. He was trying to go to UConn, which was a boys and girls basketball school. It stores Connecticut, and take it from 1AA to 1A football, and then into the Big East that had the Miami Hurricanes were like the greatest college football teams ever. Syracuse with Donovan McNabb, and Virginia Tech with Michael Vick, and West Virginia with Pac-Man Jones. And you're like, you're going to go compete with those teams? And he believed it. And he was like, we are going to get it done. And that there was something about it for me that I'm not a plan B person. I have one plan. And if that plan doesn't figure out, change the plan. And it kind of was his mindset. Like he was going to go take UConn. We were going to go to Division 1A. We're going to join the Big East. And we were going to go win games and go to a bowl game, which had not happened there. And that I fell in love with. And I fell in love with everybody telling me, you're crazy to go try that. I fell in love with it. It was the challenge. I wanted to prove people wrong. I had family members tell me I was crazy. And so that. And then I wanted to play early, too. Like, I wasn't – sports for me was everything. And so I wasn't really keen on going to redshirt or sit for a year or two. I believed in myself. I believed in the work ethic. And I wanted to play right away. And I, you know, candidly felt like that was the place that gave me the best opportunity to play right away. But the great majority of it was I was going to go prove everybody wrong who said I couldn't do it.
You know, he did sell you. He sold you on a big dream.
Oh, totally.
You did get that sell job.
Yeah.
But it was you. It was your personality. You'd had a big dream.
Yeah.
You wanted to go to the NFL.
Absolutely. Yeah. He didn't sell me on – a lot of the recruiting for me was selling me on the wishful part of it and the unrealistic part of it when it came to, you know, the playing time or the – I knew what the recruiting process was like. He sold me on the unrealistic dream. You know, the dream that you've heard the saying, if people aren't hearing your dream and laughing at you, it's not big enough.
That's right.
People would laugh at me. You know, like I tell my sons all the time, because they think part of my sport journey was easy. And they're like, you don't know what it's like. I'm like, of course I do. Of course I do. I know what it's like to fail. Of course I know what it's like to get laughed at. I would tell my teammates all the time, I'm going to go to UConn and I'm going to play in the NFL. They would laugh at me. My college teammates would laugh at me when I would tell them, I'm going to go play in the NFL. They would laugh at me. And so, he sold me on, like, let's go do the impossible. And because we truly believed it was.
And we're going to do it together.
Totally.
Yeah. Let's talk about being prepared, because that's something you've always prided yourself on, being the most prepared on that field any given day, at any given level.
Yes.
High school, got your chance, freshman. College, starting quarterback got hurt. You had a chance to play as a freshman.
Yep.
Division I, right?
Yep.
And you were ready, right? The call was made and you were ready. And then you put UConn and your coach, you put them on the map.
Yes. The prepared thing for me started in high school. My high school head coach was Joe Benanto, longtime great Connecticut legend when it came to high school coaching, both football and baseball. And at my senior year, we were a really good team. Again, the expectations were high. But Marty, it goes back to my sophomore year. Again, we're a really good football team. We're playing Thanksgiving Day, pouring rain against at the time was our rival, Derby. Pouring rain. If we win on Thanksgiving Day, we're going to the playoffs. We got the chance to beat anybody. And I fumbled the ball 9 times as the quarterback from the center. The last play of the game is an untimed down. It's 7-7. Can't kick a field goal because the weather's so bad. All I have to do is get the snap, quarterback sneak. We're going to win the game. I fumbled the snap on the 1-yard line. Mm. So imagine being the kid that has to go into the locker room and face-to-face with the seniors. Their last game ever ends that way. And I promised myself I would never not be ready for the moment ever again. And then it goes to my senior year. It's the second game of the year. We have high expectations. We're going on the road to play the number one team in the state, West Haven. And my head coach came in that Monday and was like, hey, they're better than us. This team is more talented than us. We have to figure out a way to narrow the gap. And he's like, we're going to run no huddle to start the game. I want you to study their tape. He taught me how to study tape. He was like, you'll see what defense they're in. You're going to call the plays at the line of scrimmage. We're going to try to take the lead early on them, jump on them.
Wow.
We go there. We get the opening drive. I get goosebumps about it.
Yeah.
We get the opening drive. We go 7 plays. I throw a touchdown pass, like 5 yard. And I just turned to their sideline. And I looked at their sideline. Right when the touchdown pass got caught, I looked to their sideline and I knew I had them. Like I knew we had them. I just, because they were so stunned. And in that moment, it was like, this is it. Like, this is me. Because again, I wasn't a ridiculously athletic kid. I was like, this is my way. And so then when I went to UConn, it was very similar. Okay, so we're UConn. We're going to go play in the Big East. And we're getting kids that are two stars. And we got to go play against four-star, five-star kids.
Every week, we
got to go to Boston College and Syracuse and West Virginia and Virginia Tech and North Carolina State and Miami. They're here. We're here. How do we close the gap? And my coaches would stress to me, we are going to do something very similar. You're going to study tape, and there's always a tell. You'll figure it out. And so I would study tape like a maniac, and I would look at the defense, and I would go, okay, that guy's telling me what your defense is. So I know what you're doing, and you don't know what I'm doing. And so we built this offense around, I could call any play I wanted at the line of scrimmage. I know what your defense is. Advantage us, because now I'm going to communicate to my team versus with code words what they're doing. We know what we're doing.
There's one audible after another.
We close the gap.
Yeah.
And that was a huge part of the preparation for me. I loved it. And that goes back to kind of my comment. And then there's an ego in that. Part of it is my teammates needed me. My boys needed me. For us to win and compete, they needed that part of my game. And so it became the trademark of me as a player. That's how I close the gap individually, like talent-wise. That's how we close the gap as a team. And it's the number one reason why I played in the league for 12 years. And it's the number one reason why I've, you know, gotten into this second career at ESPN.
Without question, I see the seeds there, right? That just watching, studying film,
yep.
How it changed your life.
100%.
From yeah. High school, just here's how to watch film.
Yeah.
Here's how to break down film.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. Right?
Who knows? So, all right, let's talk a little bit about you had a wonderful career at UConn, put the team, the program on the map, and broke one record after another, made yourself eligible for the NFL draft, and did okay at the combine, right? Stock dropped a little bit, and you got taken in the fifth round.
Yeah.
Tell me about that moment when you got that call.
Heartbreaking. Because heartbreaking process. The draft process was a heartbreaking process for me.
Because you kept dropping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I kept failing, you know, and it's the only thing I ever wanted at that point. It's everything I'd ever worked for, you know, since I was 12 or 13 years old. And, you know, it goes to my junior year of college. I was on Mel Kiper's, like, I think I was like 10th ranked prospect on his big board. And then after my senior season, it was an okay season. I was 25. I'm going to the first round.
Right.
And then
25.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to first round. And then my stock just starts to drop, rightfully so. I just did not perform. You know, I think that was the process of me falling in love with me. I think that was the process of me doing a lot of things to, you know, for other people rather than, you know, kind of what was the origin of my dream.
Back to basics.
Yeah. And so the draft is happening and, you know, I kind of expected to go into the second or third round. I got a call in the third round from a team that told me that they were going to draft me, and then ended up drafting another quarterback. So that was tough. Mm. The last pick of the draft in the third round was different back then, was Maurice Clarett. He had taken a year off of football. And for me, as a kid who killed himself trying to get the opportunity and just did everything in his power, I just watched a guy, and I don't know Maurice, but you know, at that time, made some tough decisions, and you're like, how does that guy get the opportunity? But I don't. Yeah. And so that was
He took a year off.
Yeah. And just a tough night, you know, because you're watching your dream go down the toilet. And then the next day comes, and it's still a little bit of a long day. Call finally comes, and the anger, the sadness, the spite go away instantly, and just overwhelm emotion of, I did it, I made it. All of the work was worth it. Every beat of sweat, every time you threw up, every
before every game,
yeah, before every 5 a.m. workout, every time that you wanted to quit and you said don't, or someone told you don't, was worth it. And so that moment forever is one that, you know, will remain with me. It was that became like a special phone call.
It must be nice now to, you know, at this point in your career, to help families and young players who are sitting either in the green room on that first day we're just waiting for that call, and a call doesn't come day one, day two, day three, right?
Yeah.
And you probably give them some words of inspiration and counsel. And
yeah, I mean, it's the NFL, once, like, literally, the moment you get drafted, two things. It's not just the player, and it's not just that moment. Most of these kids start that dream at 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. This is a decade-long dream. It's a decade-long of mom or dad or aunt or uncle or grandma or grandpa, brother, sister, making some ridiculous sacrifice for you. And you don't think about it when you're in the moment of that.
The village.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden, you know, it's this decade-long commitment by everybody, and you're at the forefront of it. There's no question. And that becomes like this thing. And when it doesn't happen the way you want, you start to feel like you're letting those people down. Like, was it all not worth it for you? And so, yeah. And then the reality is this, the NFL doesn't care when you get drafted. They don't. The dudes in the locker room, they're 30 years old. They got three kids at home. Can you help me win or no? I don't care if you were the first pick or the last pick. So when you walk into that locker room, they just care what you do from that moment forward. That's all they care about. And so,
and that's what you should care about.
And that's right? The message you try to share with those kids. Yeah. It's an amazing moment. Celebrate that. Right. Whether you're first or last, they don't care. What do you do from that moment forward? That's all anybody in the league cares about.
And that village, right? That village that you, you talk about, right? Because that dream that takes 10 years, a decade in the making. Tell me about your village. I mean, that day, right? The journey for you, right? The journey, those early morning practices, those late nights, who was there with you?
Honestly, Marty, so, you know, the relationship that I had as a teen with my dad was it wasn't a great relationship, but my dad did a lot of good stuff for me. Like, my dad taught me work ethic. My dad taught me commitment. My dad taught me how important who was in your circle was. He taught me respect. I wanted to transfer out of UConn when my freshman year because we stunk. And he was like, no, you gave them your word. Figure it out. And so definitely in that moment, he wasn't there with me. And do I regret not having him there? No. But he was definitely there with me when it came to like the lessons that he instilled in me. And so I'm not in that moment unless those are, you know, instilled in me. My teammates, though, like my teammates, I come from a little bit of a unique and broken and whatever family situation. My teammates were my family. My teammates were my family. My teammates were my family. Like I didn't have brothers. And I had two older sisters. And again, unique situation. My teammates were my family. And to this day, I'm still wired like that. You know, like I remember when I got married, my wife comes from a very big family in Philadelphia to a point where like they were always together. And her family would show up at the house when we newly got married and just show up at the house. And I'd be like, what is this? You know, where if my teammates show it up, don't even knock on the door. And so that was kind of my teammates were the ones that were there with me, sharing that moment. And, you know, I think like having that group that I knew was part of my journey, the 3, 4, 5, 6 of us that kind of went on it together. That was like the village that was with me.
Yeah. You talk about that locker room, the friendships in the locker room, they're there for life.
Cannot beat it.
Yeah, they're for life. And we try to instill that as coaches, right, with our kids. And I'm like, I remember one time I was managing district team, little league team, and my boy Jack's on the mound, and we just needed 3 outs. Put him in as a closer, and he was getting shelled. So it was 5-0. We just needed to get out of the inning, and one hit, 2 hits, 3 hits, and I call a timeout. I start walking to the mound, and he starts handing me the ball. I put my hands behind my back. I'm like, I don't want that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't want that ball. I said, what are you coming out for?
Right.
I said, I don't know, I just want to say hi. I said, look around.
Cool him off,
You're playing with your friends. This is your family here.
Yep.
It feels like you're by yourself, but you're not by yourself. Yep. These are your family. These are your boys. These are your friends. And you'll always remember this moment.
Yeah.
Go have some fun.
Yeah.
Right? It starts there. And it reminds me so much that no matter, even if you're in the NFL, it's the locker room. Right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's the place that, you know, the locker room for me was the place that I felt by far the most comfortable. It was the place that I felt like I could truly be who I was. It was a place that we are going for the same thing. And I think the great thing about, I mean, obviously I'm attached to football, but sports is like, I need you to get where I want to go. And you need me to get where you want to go. And that's like, obviously, it's a huge part of life. You know, like I get married, I need my wife to get where we want to go, and she needs me to get where we want to go. Yeah. My kids need me to get where they want to go, and I need them to get where I want to go. And so that, the locker room was by far the most special part of the journey.
So, Dan, one of my favorite segments we're going to do now, it's called Moving the Chains, and it's brought to us by Noble. And we use Moving the Chains as a moniker for life, right? You get a first down in football, it's only 10 yards. Yep. It's only a first down, but it's a small win, right? You get enough small wins in the game, you're having a good day. Same thing every day, right? And Noble is dedicated to helping their consumer and all of us achieve not only physical goals, mental goals, and emotional goals. So tell me about one non-negotiable that you would do every day to make sure you're moving the chains forward for yourself.
Figure out a way to earn the rest of my day. You know, I became obsessed, and I still am. I have to earn whatever the rest of my day can look like. And, you know, that was early on, it was the get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and work out. Like get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and train and work at the things that you're not good at. So it was plyometrics, it was jumping rope, it was quickness, it was agility. And there is the reality of like earlier bird gets the worm type of thing was for me. Yeah. And but what it did, Marty, was it trained me. What was the main thing? Like what was the most important thing for me? There's a lot of important things. What was the most important thing for me? That was every day figuring out a way to get a little bit closer to achieving my dream. And I can't enjoy the rest of my day until I do that. And I'm still like that. Like I can't go and hang out. I have to go earn the rest of my day. And because that day doesn't get given to me. I haven't done anything to get it given to me. And so that was the thing that for me as a teen became like a fabric of what I was about, is that I have to earn that day. I don't know what yesterday was about, and I don't know what tomorrow was about. I got to go earn today. And I can't really go. And listen, I'm not telling you that this is 100% like the best quality, because there are times when it becomes a little bit of like a, that's not necessarily the best way to live type of thing.
A little obsessive.
But 98% yeah. It is. Like yeah. I can't go and just go out to dinner. Have I earned my day? I can't go and enjoy a nice after. Have I earned the day? Have I done something to earn the right to enjoy that day? And that's become like a very much so like a life song of mine.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl. It's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl. Happy Friday. It's Jen. Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Love that, man. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt and a mug because I'm going to get up tomorrow morning. And I think everyone listening is
Well, I mean, it's a little bit of what I try to instill in the boys. Not yeah. only, you know, my sons, obviously, because they're in my house, and my daughter, but they're friends, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things, too, with that when it comes to kids, and again, a lot of the things that I talk about are sports-centric, but it's all I really know, is the kids have no concept of why it matters. Of course they don't. Most adults don't. And most of us will choose the easy route. That's how we're wired. We also don't know the why of what's the, like, why? Why do I have to, what's the benefit of me actually getting up and doing something like that? And so I try to impress upon the kids all the time. I remember I used to tell the rookies as I got older into the NFL, Marty, these rookies would come into the NFL, specifically like the later drafted kids, and they would try to make the team on the first day. And I'd be like, you're not going to make the team, you know, on August 4th. You have to do everything capable to have a good practice today. And then if you have a good practice today or a bad practice today, you got to get up tomorrow and do everything you can to have a good practice. And if you have a good practice or a bad practice, you got to wake up the next day, do everything you can to have a good practice. And then all of a sudden you look back and be like, I just had a good week. And then I just had a good month.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I made the team. And then you look back and be like, I just had my first season in the NFL.
Worry about today.
You got no idea that 5 months just passed. Yeah, and you're so focused on today. And I try to get that point across to a bunch of the kids is, I can guarantee you, whatever you envision for your life, and maybe you're not there, whatever you think about it, it will not happen without the work behind it.
That's right.
I can't guarantee you it will if you put in the work. You might put in as much work as humanly possible, and it may not work out for you. But guess what? If it doesn't, that means God's got something bigger for you. You just don't know it yet.
That's right.
But if you don't work at it, it's not going to happen.
Impossible for
you
to happen.
You're not going to luck into that. It's just not going to be. And so trying to get my kids to understand the why of like, hey, it's every day. It's every day because sports will end like it did for me. And what it will do is you will be so much more equipped to handle all the things that life throws at you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know that sports ended for me a long time ago, and I walk on the fields today or the court, and I just enjoy it so much more now, right? Because
oh gosh,
it's like I'm loving the game and what it brought and the memories, and and I also, being a father on the sideline, I've grown as a parent, learning from my kids, learning about the game and the nuances of the game, because I played more. I didn't coach until I was much older. And let's talk a little bit about your dad, because obviously he gave you some very important life lessons, but he did the best he could.
Yeah.
Regardless of where it all ended up, he did the best he could, right? And I think a lot of us as parents, we're trying just to do the best we can,
yeah.
Right? And I think, let's talk a little bit about like travel sports and how crazy parents are getting and,
yeah.
Travel,
youth sports and travel sports is a lot just because it's different than it was years ago. Years ago, it was if you were one of the 12 best players in the sport, you were hand-selected, you were picked, And nowadays, it's like, well, I get to go pick the team.
Right.
Oh, I don't like that team. And that coach told me.
It was the all-star team.
Yeah.
Right.
You just got picked,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
You got picked by the other coaches. And nowadays it's, well, and it goes back to this, when you as the parent step in and become the third party in the coach athlete dynamic, you're ripping away any progress from your kid. You think you're kidding yourself into thinking that you're helping them. You're not. You're ripping away the progress from them. And
the journey.
You're taking it from them. And it stinks. Like no one, I don't think anyone's sitting here telling you, watching your kid not play as much as you think they should is fun. Of course it's not. Or watching, now there's situations when the coach is too extreme or whatnot. And that's obviously, that's a parenting thing. That's not a youth sports thing. Yeah. But yeah.
There's good coaches and bad coaches.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But yes, it's hard. But if you don't allow them to go through that struggle, they'll never, ever, 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 ever reach their capability. And so youth sports and travel sports has become a lot. And you as the parent have to, it's probably, years ago, I would imagine, Marty, when it came to parenting, the biggest struggle was like, was your kid ever going to be home by sunset type of thing? Or, kid going to offer him a cigarette when they were 14? It's different now, right? It's different. One of the dynamics because sports has grown is you got to manage the youth sports element of your kid. You got to manage what teams they're going to be on, what coach they're going to play for, what friends they're going to be around, what social media you're going to allow them to be a part of or have. And so, I think that there's a lot that's broken about youth sports and a lot that's broken about travel sports. That doesn't mean it all is. My kids have been fortunate to experience some really, really good stuff.
Yeah. And mine.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, I'm just being candid, I still think a lot of it from the parents comes from regret being permanent.
Living vicariously.
Yeah, you know, like that regret of I didn't do it or I made the mistakes and I'm not going to let you do that. That's a slippery slope, because at some point when the kid starts to feel like, whether you mean it intentionally or not, when the kid starts to feel like that's what you care about the most as the parent, that will fracture the relationship. It will. Because if you're the parent and this is the most important thing, the sports life is the most important thing, they're going to lose. The kid is going to lose. The kid is going to play bad. And if your love, or at least the way you direct the love, or your mood is directly attached to that, there's going to be some really dark times in your house. And I told my kids, Marty, like, right now, like, the thing that I look forward to the most is watching you play. It's really the only thing that makes me happy on a consistent basis. Sure. My job.
Saturday and Sunday mornings.
Yeah, like, yeah. I love it. I also have to be very, very conscious of it, because I'm a wildly competitive and intense person. Yeah.
I encourage parents all the time, ask your kids, do they still love it?
Yeah.
Because this is not for me. This is for you.
And what do you need from me in games?
Yeah.
Like, do you want me to yell from the stands? Do you not want me to yell from the stands? Do you want me to challenge you during the game? Do you want me to shut up during the game? Do you want me to whistle? Like, my kids, Marty, I've asked my kids, my daughter, who, you know, Lenny, she's a great little athlete.
Great athlete.
She said, I get one whistle a game. Because sometimes she's nine, right? So if I feel like, I'll go, and she'll look at me and I'll go, you can play a little harder. I have one son, don't talk to me during the game. Don't talk to me. Don't say anything. Great. I have one son, he's like, if I'm doing something good, encourage me through it. And so, like, you got to figure that out from your kid too, as well as what do they want from you?
Yeah. I have sign language. They tell me, okay, if I need to do something fast, do this.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Right?
And that's, it's our job to figure that out though.
Or think it through, that thing. So exactly. And I always make it very clear, encourage parents. Ask your kid, do they still love it? Because it's not for you and it's not about you, right? You're there to help them with their dreams. If the dream is the sports, if it's not, that's okay too.
Totally.
Playing sports is great, will only affect their life, you know, in only positive ways.
The only thing is, in my mindset is, if you play, there's a way that we go about it though. These are non-negotiables. Like if
yes,
you play,
sir,
you're gonna play as hard as you possibly can. And you're going to compete as hard as you possibly can, and you're going to be the best possible teammate you can be. I've gotten to the point, Marty, where I tell my kids before every game, remember your ABCs. These are non-negotiables. You are always in attack mode. That doesn't mean it's going to go well all the time. You're always in attack mode. You will always believe in yourself, and you will always compete to your very best. And if that you do that, I don't care about the result. You care about the result. And
I don't have a tattoo, but I think I might be getting a tattoo.
ABCs, man.
I love
so
that.
Those are the non-negotiables, though, because it goes back to this. I know what it takes. I know what it takes. And if you're telling me that this is something that's very important to you, I can't help you that much in, like, algebra. That's not going to be my thing. I can help you in this.
I know my wife, Abby's listening to you and thinking, God, he sounds just like MJ.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You play as hard as you possibly can, but don't bother.
Right.
Just don't bother.
Right.
Right. Every single time.
And my heart is different than your heart, you know?
That's
but that's
right.
Part of my job. Like, yeah. I got to get you to understand that, and I have to get you to understand why. I got to get you to understand why.
And the things that you do that when no one's watching, that's, you know, what counts.
And I don't give them the option. My kids don't have the option to choose when no one's watching or not.
Love that.
When you come home from school, this started in seventh grade with the boys, the first two things that you do are your schoolwork and 30 minutes of figuring out something in sports that you're bad at. You're not allowed to work at something you're good at. 30 minutes, you do your schoolwork. When that's done, it's 30 minutes of doing something that is a weakness within your sport. It's not an option. It's a chore in our house.
Yeah.
Because then I'm building, it's building the habit.
Yeah.
It's building the habit of I've got to do something every day to get myself better at something. And, you know, there's been positive benefits of the play, but it's more like I'm watching them learn, you know, what it's like to, like, how to figure out getting better at something in life that they see results of.
It's not just a shoe. It's an innovative, personalized treatment for your body, designed to relieve knee or lower back pain and get you moving better. Apples, precisely what you need.
That creed, who is Dan Orlovsky, right? The ABC, it has been with you for so long, right? Now, you have a beautiful career, 12 years in the NFL, and primarily as a backup, not a lot of shine always, right? Took 2 or 3 years to start your first game right, in the NFL. I want to talk about being an NFL quarterback as a backup, because with someone who prides himself being so prepared, watching that film, studying that film, did you always feel, just put me in, coach, I'm ready?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, the life of the backup. So, Marty, my first, you know, there's some teams that are really well run in the NFL, and then there's some teams that aren't, and situations just aren't great. And you like, there was a part, so I go get drafted to the Lions my rookie year. And my rookie year, we play on Thanksgiving Day. I actually play a little bit in that game. They fire my coach the next day. So that's my first year in the NFL. Like, wait, what? This is the NFL? And we went like 2-14. Then the next year we get a new coach. I think we go 3-13. And so my first 2 years in the NFL, we win 5 games. And I'm like, oh, this stinks. Because I only won little leagues. I won in high school. I won in college. I'm going to be the go person to save the day at Detroit. That didn't happen. And so like part of you starts to become a different person. And I felt myself becoming a different person. I freaking hated losing. And then my first 3 or 4 years in the NFL, we lose a lot, and you like start to become numb to it. Well, this is just it. This is the business of it. And like you start to change the athlete that you are. And I hated that, because it was that internal fight, you know, of like, Dan, go save the day. Like, go save the day. This is what you do. This is who you are. But then
that's like your internal voice, and no one's hearing you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and like I never really got the opportunity that I wanted, type of thing, you know. And so first couple of years were tough, but you're always ready. And then I go down to Houston, and I signed with Houston mainly because the starting quarterback was like one of my dearest friends. Now, he was actually the host on my visit at the University of Virginia. He would get hurt like 8 games a year, so I'm like, perfect. I'm finally going to get the chance to play on a good team. He started 32 straight games.
Oh, man.
So that's 5 or 6 years into my career. I'm a free agent. I get cut. Houston fires me, says, you're not worth the money anymore. And I'm like, that was the first time in my life that I got cut. First time in my life I got, you're not good enough. Crying on my bed. I'm 26, 27, sitting there with my dog just in tears. I think the world's going to be over. And that's one of the, you know, part of the massive faith journey for me in life. And then I go to Indy, get the chance to play a little bit. I play the year that Peyton Manning had his neck surgery and he was unavailable. I play the last 5 games of the year. I play well. We win 2 out of 5. I beat the 2-seed Houston, or we beat the 2-seed Houston on a game winner on national TV.
Got him back.
And I remember being like, I'm going to get so much money from the NFL this year. I'm going to be a starting quarterback. Free agency tells me the NFL doesn't see you as a starting quarterback. It just doesn't. You're a backup. And in that moment, that was a huge moment for me to be like, okay, I can try to make this career as long as I can and live out my dream as long as I can, or I can just sulk and feel bad for myself and point fingers and you're wrong and you're wrong or you're wrong. And so I kind of committed to like, okay, if I'm going to be a backup and you're going to tell me I'm a backup, you're going to get the best backup ever, type of thing, was my mindset.
Mindset.
Yeah.
It really is the same exact mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I realized was, okay, more than likely I will not play. You get 16 opportunities. Now it's 17. 16 opportunities. I'm probably not going to get that opportunity like every other guy on this team. The third string running back will get special team reps and the third receiver will get... I will not get, so my Monday through Saturday became way more important than my Sunday. Because how do I prove, there's 53 guys on a team, how do I prove that I'm worthy of one of those when I don't play? And so like I was gonna make sure that the backup tight end knew what he was supposed to do on every play, and the nickelback knew exactly how a quarterback would try to see that defense and that concept. And I was gonna make sure our starting quarterback had everything that he needed to go play his very best. And then the personality started to grow where, again, like you're trying to bring value to a locker room. Okay, so you're 21, you just got $10 million and you're single. You wanna go enjoy the town. And you're 33, you're fighting for your job every day, you've got 4 kids at home and you've been married for 10 years. How do I get along with both of you? How do I communicate the same way with both of you? How do I get all of us in the same? So that became like the Monday through Saturday improving my worth became way more of my focus than Sundays, because I didn't really get the chance to play that much.
You're the consigliere of a mob family.
Everyone's got a role.
It's a beautiful thing about football, right?
Yeah.
Because if everyone does their job,
yep,
and does their assignment, whatever that assignment is, every single week you have a chance to win.
Yep.
That's a beautiful thing about the game of football,
yep,
as well.
And if one person doesn't, could be a disaster.
Now you're an expert as a backup quarterback, the best in the business at being prepared as a backup quarterback. And then it ends. And you turn that page. You create a new chapter for you as an NFL analyst at ESPN. And you went viral because of your film and breaking down film. You started posting things on social media with your video camera on your laptop and using your finger. And people just fell in love with it. And you carved out a whole new niche and changed the game.
Yeah, I mean, talk about ideal timing and you know, catching the luck of that. You know, the funny part of it is I had no social media when I started. I thought social media was stupid. I was one of those people. I was like, social media is dumb. I don't need 10 followers.
It's a fad.
Yeah. I was like, it's not for me. And when the first night I recorded a video, it was Sunday Night Football. The Panthers and the Dolphins were playing. And this was kind of in between. Am I going to go coach? Do I want to get done with football? I've done football since I was 10. Maybe I'll go do something else because, you know, football just broke my heart type of thing, you know, because someone told me I wasn't good enough anymore. And the Dolphins or the Panthers are playing. Cam Newton sees a blitz. He changes the play at the line of scrimmage, and I can see what's happening, and throws a touchdown on a wide receiver screen, and the broadcast doesn't talk about it. And I'm like, that's sick. Like, that, I want people to realize how cool that was, that Cam saw something and
just like you did in high school,
changed it, touchdown.
Audible.
And boom. And people should realize how awesome that is. And my wife, you know, Tiffany was like, you should make a video and put it on the internet. I'm like, stop.
The World Wide Web.
Yeah. www. And so I was like, no. And a couple of minutes later, she convinces me and I mute the television. I kind of do what I've kind of started to do on TV. I posted, I go to bed, and I wake up, and it went viral. And I was like, that's it. Because I always felt people wanted to know that stuff. Yeah. We're in an era where information is at our fingertips. So the more you know, the more you feel empowered by it. And that was it. For me, it was, I'm going to do that. And I loved doing it. And I felt like I was around enough coaches and enough offenses to, and that's just the way I saw football. And then Peter Schrager from NFL Network, who's now at ESPN, reached out to me and said, would you come do this on TV? And I said, absolutely. So I would wake up at like 1 a.m, drive up to New York or train up to New York from Philly.
NFL Studios.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, kind of break down a tape bit by bit by bit by bit by bit. And, you know, I got the opportunity to do that for a couple of times. And then networks came calling. And, you know, it was just a very fortunate timing on my end.
You know, what comes across every day on camera is that you still love what you do every single day. You earn your day, my friend.
Yeah, you have to, you know? Man.
But it goes back to falling in love with breaking down film with your high school coach, and you're still breaking down film. Amazing.
Yeah.
Listen, we're going to do a little segment here now that we call Thoughts from 30,000 Feet.
Okay.
Makes you just be a little bit more reflective. And we like asking, if you had the privilege of sitting down with your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I'm not going to try not to cry.
Please do, because I'm about to cry myself.
If I sat there with my 18-year-old self, I'd tell him, look at me in the eye and say, it'll all be worth it. And I know at times it'll suck. And I know at times you'll feel like you're absolutely by yourself. And I know at times you'll feel like you want to give up. Every single one will be worth it. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
Give him a hug.
I think so. I think like just that lock in the eye of like, it'll be worth it. Like, trust me, it'll all work out. All those big, crazy, ridiculous dreams that you have that people think are outrageous with sports, with family, with the woman you're going to marry, with the dad you want to be. It's going to happen. Just don't quit.
Yeah.
Don't quit.
Oof. It sounds like you broke the cycle, man. you broke the cycle and being an amazing, amazing father, you know? And me too, you know, you had a troubling relationship or a challenging relationship with your dad, and he did the best he could, and I had no father figure, right? So I think back now today on, I'm not trying to make up for something I didn't have, but I do what comes naturally to me, and I hug and kiss my kids every single day, and I push them, and I'm biggest cheerleader, et cetera. And the concept of talking to my 18-year-old self is moving, and I saw where you were at.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful thing. Thank you for sharing that, man. Yeah. All right. You made me cry. Thanks.
I cry too much.
Please. Those Sarah McLachlan commercials with the ASP. Really, it has to be a three-minute-long commercial.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get 2 minutes on the clock. This is where we do rapid fire, man. Rapid fire questions.
Rapid fire answer.
One-worders. Yes, quick one-liners.
Okay.
All right. Best player you ever played with?
Calvin Johnson, the most talented person I've ever been around. And he also had a work ethic like he was the least talented person I'd had ever been around. An unbelievable physical specimen that had unbelievable characteristics.
That's amazing. And you threw a 96-yard touchdown to him, didn't you?
Yeah, it was an easy throw. It was a little bit more like, Calvin's out there, sweet, launch it to him.
It's still 90-something yards, man. Best player you played against?
Ed Reed. Man, I played against some great players, but I will give you a story. We were playing against Ed Reed, and we were watching tape. This is when I was the backup, and we were telling our starting quarterback, hey, listen, Ed's the best liar in the NFL. Whatever you think he's telling you he's going to do, he ain't going to do it. So coach is going to call this play, and he's going to tell you to throw it to this guy. Do not throw it to this guy. He's just baiting you. Don't throw it to him. God bless. We called that play, and you watch Ed, and you're like, he's telling you to throw that ball to the seam. Don't throw it to the seam. Our quarterback throws it to the seam. Pick six.
That's fantastic. Favorite play to run as a QB?
Favorite play to run as a quarterback? I like the concept where, like, we call it full field progressions. So I got a post on the outside that gives me a chance to throw a touchdown if I get the right coverage. I got kind of an outbreaking route that gives me a little comfort. Like, I feel like I can get
that
ball out.
That's your B?
I can get the, okay, cool. Crossing route where, like, if I hate it front side, I can rip a ball backside and then a big in. You got to have a good offensive line for this stuff and then a little check down. And
there's a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah.
You're sitting kinda, in the pocket a long
time.
Yeah,
you better have a good group up front. But I like having options, and I like having the opportunity, no matter the coverage, to have a place to go with the ball.
Game day superstition you're not afraid to admit.
Game day superstition I'm not afraid to admit would be every day I would have 2 pieces of chicken breast. I would take marinara sauce or meat sauce, and I would cover the marinara sauce, and then I would have noodles with just Parmesan cheese. So, but they couldn't touch. And I'm not like that with my food, but they couldn't touch. So the 2 pieces of chicken breast by themselves and the pasta with no sauce, but
the
just
marinara
the cheese.
Was on the chicken.
Marinara was on the chicken.
Still have it that way?
I hope I enjoy it a little bit more nowadays. Traditional chicken parm.
All right, 2025 NFL draft.
Yeah.
All right, initial impressions. Travis Hunter, go.
Absolute unicorn. I grew up with Charles Woodson and Chris Gamble. There's no shot he fails. He's too physically gifted, and the fact that I only love football. I don't party. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do anything. I just want to play football. Remarkable physical talent, unlike kind of anything we've ever seen. Unicorn.
Shohei Ohtani of football, right?
Yep.
Abdul Carter.
Freakazoid. Just physically a freak coming off the edge. And a guy that, you know, when you have a person that big that moves that fast, he changes the way we as an offense get to the line of scrimmage. Like, gosh, what are we going to do with this guy? You know?
And he's a beast.
Freakazoid.
Yeah. Ashton Jeanty.
Special talent. You know, strong, tough, big, very difficult tackle. You know, I think the more that you've paid attention to the NFL, the more that you've realized if you can hand the ball off to a guy and you know he's going to go forward, that's such an advantage as a play caller. So I think he's going to bring some of that bruising type of very difficult tackle back to the NFL.
Shedeur Sanders in 3 years.
I would be surprised if Shedeur Sanders in 3 years is not a successful starting quarterback. Shedeur's physical ability, his tape says, starting quarterback in the NFL that you can win games with. Obviously, the process for him didn't go certainly as he had anticipated. I mentioned before, no one cares anymore. Go do it. it would be because of his own, maybe his own not learning from the process, that he physically is not capable of winning games with as a starting quarterback.
Amazing. I want to remind you of a day that almost blew up the internet when on National Autism Awareness Month, you know, and it was a moment you and I were texting back and forth after that day because we all watched you, and you had your son Madden, who has autism.
You've coached him.
I've coached, and it's been an honor to coach him. And especially up at bat. He'd be yelling at you, and he'd be yelling at you up at bat. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Okay, I'll do it. Yeah, I don't want to do it. But I remember everyone was amazed by his talent as an artist. But you were on live television, and there's your boy doing his thing, just doing his thing, despite any challenges he might have.
Yeah.
And nothing could have interrupted your joy in that moment. And I said to myself, because we've had conversations about the troubles with no dad, dad, tough dad, you know, and how you and I are breaking the cycle. When I saw you smile, and everyone could have left that room, and you didn't care. You were just in the moment. And for me, as your friend, I knew, man, see?
Yeah.
He broke the cycle. He broke the cycle.
Thank you.
100%. Yeah, it was, So as a little memory of that day, we wanted to present you with some of your son's drawings that he did on air. Remember that one? This one actually looks better looking than you
are. Awesome.
This one actually looks a little better looking than you are.
I can't believe you did my hair like that. Thank you, brother.
But these are just tremendous.
This is the one. This is the feelings one, man.
Yeah, man.
This is the one that, like, describes him, man.
He's the best.
Thank you.
And he taught you a lot, didn't he?
Yeah, Marty, it was, I'm obviously emotional about it now. It was emotional in the moment because, you know, like, I think I was witnessing a person who didn't quit. You know, I was witnessing a person who, like, you know, just didn't allow someone to tell him can or cannot. And he's worked so hard at using it to become a strength of his, not a weakness of his.
Superpower.
Yeah, man. And, you know, it goes to, you know, like the person you marry, you know, type of thing. Because my wife has searched to the ends of the earth to go, get him to this therapist or this parent therapist or this, that, and we can help him. I remember a couple years ago, she brought something to me. And she was like, it's a lot of money. You know, it'll be like $10,000 to do this for him. And I was like, phew. And I just remember her going, you would pay that for the boys in sports. And I was like, you're right. You know, and so it was a little bit of like her and all the people that were a part of him over the last 13 years. It was like a win. You know, it was a win for him and for all those people. So it was an awesome moment, man. I don't mean to cry.
No, man. It was an awesome moment for me. I know Abby and I were like, we couldn't. She was texting me, did you see Dan? You see Dan and Maddie? Did you see them?
Yeah.
And it was a moment, and I texted you, time stood still.
Yeah.
Because you know he ran the show that day.
Totally, yeah.
And it was like, it was Madden's show live to millions, and I was so happy for you, happy for Tiffany. And it meant so much to so many families who struggled with the same challenges. But look what he did, because he never, ever gave up.
Amen.
And we can all learn from that.
Amen.
Attaboy. Dude, man, this is special for me.
Thank you.
I can't thank you enough for being here. You know, I love you, bud.
Thank you. Love you too, brother. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
God. Thank you, man.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.